You're listening to a Dwell Community Church production. If you'd like to check out more resources, visit dwellcc.org.
We're picking up in Paul's second missionary journey. We've been doing this for the last couple weeks. He started out on the right in Antioch and went across that line west on the top part of the screen toward the town of Philippi, where he started a church. Then he went to Thessalonica, Berea, and then eventually Athens. This morning, he's moved on to from Athens to the city of Corinth, which is just a little bit further west of Athens, right in the middle of Greece. And Corinth is an interesting place geographically. If you zoom in on this area and you look at a map of Greece, you can see it's basically a peninsula that is bounded by the Aegean Sea on the east and the Adriatic Sea on the west. And Corinth is in this little isthmus, this little strip of land right here that connects the top and bottom of Greece, which means that you can't really see it unless you zoom in more, but the Aegean and Adriatic Seas touch right at Corinth. And so ships would come to this town, and in order to avoid the long, dangerous voyage around the bottom of Greece, they would drag these ships over a limestone road from one sea to the other. It was a huge endeavor, but safer than sailing through all those treacherous islands on the southern part of Greece. And so, yeah, today they've actually cut a channel at Corinth to connect both of these oceans. Pretty cool. So anyhow, it was a very important port and a center of trade, too, because even overland, anything going from northern Greece to southern Greece and vice versa had to go through this strip of land. So this was a freewheeling, Corinth was a freewheeling port city. And you know what port cities are like. Pretty much anything goes. Plato, the philosopher, called prostitutes Corinthian girls. And if you read, when the Romans talk about corrupting someone, they call it Corinthianizing them. So in our modern parlance, whatever happened in Corinth, what? Stayed in Corinth, right? Okay, it was that kind of place. And so it makes you wonder, as Paul's rolling into this big city, how is he feeling to come into a place like this? And we actually know. Paul tells us later in the New Testament, he says, I came to you guys in Corinth in weakness and fear, and with much trembling, which is very understandable. You think about, just let's review a little bit. In Philippi, what happened to him? He was almost beaten to death and thrown in jail. It's brutal. And then he walks with a lacerated back, him and Silas, almost 90 miles over 1,800 feet of elevation change, shows up in Thessalonica, starts another church there, and guess what? The Jews are after him again. The Jews run him out of town, run him all the way over to Berea. He plants a church in Berea, and it happens again. He's Jewish, and these Jewish opponents of Christianity are still going after him. He shows up in Athens utterly alone, where his message is, you know, mixed response. Some people receive it, some people dismiss him with polite contempt. And then he rolls into Corinth, and he's at a low point. And one point, on one hand, you think about everything that's happened and what we've covered in the last few weeks, an amazing stretch of what we call ministry, of getting out there and sharing the message of Christ and helping people come to know Christ and serving them. Unbelievable stretch of ministry, but also Paul, by his own admission, was lonely. Talks about that when he was in Athens. He was doing this stretch all by himself. He was anxious about the health of the churches he planted, and he was exhausted from the demands of travel and being beaten. And so, yeah, it was definitely a low point, a difficult time emotionally for him. He was spent as he rolled into Corinth. I don't know if you guys remember this scene. Remember in The Empire Strikes Back when Luke told Yoda, I'm not afraid? What did Yoda say?
You You will be.
Yeah. Yeah, if you're here and if you've ever served God and you have not had a low point, it's coming. Every Christian that served God for a significant amount of time reaches these points where they roll into situations like this trembling because they're just about out of gas. And that's what we're looking at here. And so I want to get at just a couple things. These are so normal. It's absolutely normal to go through a low point. Maybe that's how you've come in here. Maybe you're a Michigan fan. And I hope this builds you up today. Now, you know, I don't know, maybe you're in conflict. I'll stop. That's the last Michigan reference I'm going to. Maybe you're in conflict with somebody. Maybe your marriage is difficult. Maybe things at work are hard. Maybe you've lost somebody that you care about or that you've got a health issue that you just can't seem to shake. A lot of different reasons why in the course of serving God we could get there. And when you're in a low point, it can feel isolating. And not just that, you're like, what's tomorrow going to bring? You can be living in a state of fear. And I just hope watching how Paul dealt with this and how God helped Paul will be beneficial for you. One basic thing that you'll see all through this account is that you can feel alone, but you never are. Never. Not as long as the Lord is there. Jesus promised his disciples, he promised Paul, he promises every Christian in this room, he'll be with us always as we serve him, even to the end of the age. So you're not alone. Jesus is very much, even if you can't see it, even if you can't hear from him right now directly, he's very deeply concerned about what you're going through. And I guess this is the rub with a lot of these teachings is, okay, that's great. Thanks, Mike. It's good to know that Jesus is with me. But is there any teeth to that? Are there any teeth? Is there any content to that? Like, is that just some kind of vague assurance? Or am I going to actually notice how God is with me? And I think as we go through, you'll see, as we consider how God encouraged Paul during this low point of ministry, hopefully you'll start to see ways that God is doing similar things in your own life. So, picking up our account, there he met a Jew, there in Corinth, he met a Jew named Aquila, a native of Pontus, who had recently come from Italy with his wife Priscilla, because Claudius had ordered all the Jews to leave Rome. Paul went to see them, and because he was a tent maker as they were, he stayed and worked with them. Okay, so here's one thing right away. You're at a low point. One thing that God will often do is put someone, a new friendship in your life to build you up. You know, this mention of Aquila and Priscilla, we don't know when they became Christians, but by the end of the New Testament, they have become some of Paul's most treasured and trusted and valued co-workers. Huge ministry partners. These guys come up again and again in different books of the Bible. And these guys entered Paul's life at just the right time when he deeply needed their companionship. Now, they got to know each other because they would spend long hours in the evening sewing tents. They were tent makers by trade. Paul was from a region that was famous for making tent cloth. Apparently, this was a trade he picked up when he was younger. And so they would hang out and talk and just be together as they worked together. And as that happened, this much-needed friendship formed. You can see later in the New Testament, this is how much he valued them. He's like, give my greetings to Priscilla and Aquila, my co-workers in the ministry of Christ Jesus. In fact, they once risked their lives for me. I'm thankful to them, and so are all the Gentile churches. Can you guys ever remember somebody playing this role in your life? Somebody that was a huge encouragement when they became your friend? Many years ago, this would have been 1996, I left what we call our college ministry. I was leading a college home church, came up into the adult ministry. And I came up with a group of people I didn't know well. And it was just Edith and I, my wife and I, leading. But I was hanging out one day with some of the guys in my group, and one of them on my front porch was Jay Young. And I remember I could tell he had like deep convictions about following God. And I didn't know him that well back then. But I was like, you know what? I know the Lord's, this is a risky plant to start this church, but I know God's with us. And I know that this guy is someone I can work with. We can serve together. He's in it to win it. Super fortifying to have him come into my life. And we've gone on to serve together. That group did just fine. And we're best friends today. And he entered my life at just the right time. And so, you know, this is easy to overlook. This form of encouragement here might be sitting right next to you in the form of a spouse or a friend that God has put in your life right now. That's often one of the most powerful ways God encourages people, is just through this kind of thing. Well, moving on, every Sabbath he reasoned in the synagogue trying to persuade the Jews and Greeks. And then when Silas and Timothy came from Macedonia, he devoted himself exclusively to preaching, testifying to the Jews that Jesus was the Christ. So you think it's cool when you have a new friend enter your life. How about when old friends come back? Oh, man. Few things are more, just bring more joy to me than getting reconnected with old friends. You know, if you remember, Silas and Timothy and Paul had to separate. They've been separated for several months now. Now they're back together again. And I just imagine Paul's sewing his tent by candlelight, looks through the doorway, sees these beaming faces of Silas and Timothy. They embrace. They catch up. I just imagine how super fortifying that would be. Now, part of why it was encouraging was when Silas and Timothy came, they were like, hey, Paul, you know all those churches that we planted together? They're doing well. So the news was good. But more than that, when these two rolled into town, they brought Paul resources. They brought Paul the support he needed. Look what it says. I don't know if you caught this. Once they showed up, he was able to devote himself exclusively to preaching. No more late night tent sewing to support himself. He could just focus on the ministry. Why was that? Well, it was because they brought him some money. They brought him financial support. We've got a lot of evidence that that support probably came from Philippi. He was supported by this church throughout his ministry. And later, this is a different gift that he received later in his church planning, but just look at the impact that this financial support had on Paul. He's like, at the moment, I have all I need and more. I'm generously supplied with the gifts you sent me with Epaphroditus. They're a sweet-smelling sacrifice that's acceptable and pleasing to God. So he's just like, I can't tell you how grateful I am that you sent me this support. It made all the difference. You know, what they're doing by financially supporting Paul, they're buying more of his time, more of his training, more of his investment in the people that he's serving. They're converting money into something way more valuable. They're converting it into impacting people and helping them come to know God better. That's money well spent. And so, what about you or me? You know, God, if you're in the midst of serving, can you expect a little cash every so often? I don't know if it's going to work that way. Maybe. You might. You never know. I remember when Jay and I were starting to lead. He eventually became a leader. We were leading that group together. Like many of our home group leaders, like all of them, we never received a penny for what we were doing. But, you know, I look back, my parents were helping with our two girls when they were really little. That made a big difference. That they got some grandpa and grandma time. That was huge. I also remember Jay and I at the time had super flexible jobs where we could be more available than most people that work full-time. And then we had the encouragement of our home group coach, Patty Sprague, over here. Remember that, Patty? Patty gave us some expert advice on how to lead an adult home church because we were new to that neck of the woods. And so we got the resources we needed. And that's really the principle here. The principle isn't you're going to get money. It's that if you respond to God and you step out and serve, you are going to be given the resources you need to do his work. That's God's promise. So that's when he says, lo, I'm with you always, this is part of it right here. He'll put what you need in your hands to do his work. And that was super encouraging for Paul. All right, so the Jews opposed Paul and became abusive. He shook out, and I don't know, that may mean they were beating on him a little bit. He shook out his clothes in protest and said to them, your blood be on your own heads. I'm clear of my responsibility. From now on, I'm going to go to the Gentiles. Okay, now this is a typical pattern. Paul goes into a synagogue. Some people respond, some don't. And those who don't like their message don't just kick him out of the synagogue. They start chasing him around and trying to kill him. Okay, so this is super, super troubling pattern. And so at this point, Paul's like, I'm out of here. I'm done speaking in the synagogue. So he leaves the synagogue and goes next door to the house of Titius Justus, a worshiper of God. Okay, so this guy, Titius, had to be wealthy to have a house big enough for everybody to meet in. And so Paul and all of his followers shift over literally right next door to the synagogue. This would be like building an Aldi next to a Kroger. You know, it's just like immediate competition here. Yeah, and so again, what does this fledgling movement in Corinth need? They need a place to meet. And so this is yet another resource that God provides Paul and these other believers in town to encourage them. And you'll see that. Just God, here's the thing about God. We think all he cares about is like religious things, churchy things. God's concern for us is way broader than that. He cares about practical things like you eating well and getting rest and having just the wherewithal to serve. And so, yeah, something like they need a roof over their head when they meet. God knows that. God knew Paul was tired and weary as he was sowing those tents. God knew they needed more, and so he provided these resources. Here's something else. Here's another encouragement during Paul's low point. This is unbelievable. Crispus, the synagogue ruler, and his entire household believed in the Lord. That is unbelievable. A key player in the synagogue, you know, an opinion leader, decides, I'm going to be a follower of Christ, even though he knows half the congregation doesn't like that. And it says many of the Corinthians who heard him believed and were baptized. Have you ever been trying to serve God and not seeing anything and not seeing anything, and then finally there's a breakthrough? Oh, is that encouraging. Years ago, maybe some of you in this room remember, we were trying to get involved with high school students at Northland High School. Our church was. And a pocket of our church, there was a lot of students from Northland High School coming out. But there was one student there who was a very brilliant atheist. And he was friends with a lot of folks in our church. He'd go to parties, really liked us, but he was super hostile to Christianity and would argue against Christianity at least for a year or two. I forget how long it was. Man, I remember that one night we all had a fire up north of the zoo along the Scioto River, and we got word, and I don't know, it wasn't through cell phones. Somebody had to show up and tell us, but someone told us that this atheist guy had become a Christian, and I just remember the exuberance and just like the astonishment and the gratitude that you could see around that fire. People were so pumped. Super encouraging when you have a breakthrough. And we saw, you know, many people came to faith in Northland after that. So this is, man, there are those stretches where you get to see visibly powerful evidence that God's at work. That's a major encouragement. It's also a reminder, too, as we're trying to do difficult things when we're feeling down, it's a reminder that God can do the impossible. You know, if you're down 4 touchdowns with 2 minutes left in the fourth quarter, you can't, okay, I did it again. But, you know, if you're down a lot, there's no way to come back in a football game. But if God's involved, anything can happen. Literally anything can happen. Even guys like this atheist can come to God. And so what about this? I know it's counterintuitive. Next time you're in a low point, what about just asking God for something that seems impossible and praying big? It's not what you feel like doing, but if God's in the mix, it makes sense to do this because sometimes we have amazing breakthroughs. Okay, so let's just catch up here. Where are we at? We've got one way in this low point that God encouraged Paul was by bringing new friends and reuniting him with old ones. He does that with us as well. He provided the needed resources. He gives us breakthroughs. And same thing with Paul. In Paul's case, though, he needed more. One thing that Paul was wrestling with was he was getting beaten and threatened and run out of town everywhere he went. And he was afraid. He was fearful. And so we read, one night, the Lord came to Paul and spoke to him in a vision. He said, "Paul, don't be afraid. Keep on speaking. Don't be silent, for I'm with you, and no one is going to attack and harm you because I have many people in this city." Okay. This would be something I was trying to grasp for what to call it, like a direct word from God. You know, Paul was understandably fearful about getting physically beaten, and so God tells him, "Nobody's going to attack you. I'm not going to let that happen. Yeah, it's happened in other places, but it won't happen in Corinth." And he reminds him, "I'm with you." Now, I know a lot of us have heard like the gospel message, the message of forgiveness through Christ has its own intrinsic power. Paul calls it the power of God for salvation. But this is more than that. This is God saying, "Hey, Paul, when you open your mouth, I'll be present in that step of faith. I will give your words power. I will help what you say sink in and have gravity and weightiness so people hear what you're saying. I'm going to be in that moment when you speak." And again, for a guy who was literally trembling as he rolled into town, how helpful was that? Have you guys ever experienced this? One thing that you read about this in the Bible, it always makes people wonder, should I expect something similar when I'm down? Maybe God will speak directly to me. And I got to say, this is not just for guys like Paul in the Bible. God loves you and is concerned about you. And sometimes God will break in when you need it most with a direct encouragement from him. I can think of times when God spoke. And I remember one time I was going to teach a meeting like this at a retreat. I was on the rocks in my dating relationship with my girlfriend. I was getting in conflict with my roommates. I was doing poorly in my undergrad degree at OSU, and I was just depleted. I was in the basement of this house where I was living with other Christians, trying to come up with a teaching, and just super, super miserable. And I was studying Psalms to get ready, and it said in Psalm 40, verse 11, it says, God says, "I will not withhold my compassion from you." And it's subjective, but I remember just feeling literally hugged by God. I could feel God's loving presence right there. It's still to this day, I look back on that. It was so encouraging. So the idea that God might do that in a powerful way, yeah, that is possible. But I'd be lying if I didn't admit that there have been many more times when I've called out to God and gotten nothing. You know, Lord, I'm hurting, and just heard nothing back. That is also just as common. I don't think this kind of experience that Paul's laying out, I don't think it's very common. It does happen. I will say this, though. Even when he doesn't speak in an audible way like this, we have many of the promises that we need already in Scripture. Think about that one, "I'm with you," right? That's so important to know it's in the Bible. It's already in there. Many of the things that you'll hear God say, he's already said in the Bible, "I'll never leave you or forsake you." He's like, "Stay tight with me, abide in me, and you'll bear fruit." There's so many promises that hurting people need that God in his love has already given us. A while back, I got this little, I brought it with me. I got this little deck of flashcards from Cindy Spinks, from Lou's wife. I was going through a really difficult time. My wife and I were both. And this, it's pink. That's the one drawback, but aside from that, it's just a bunch of verses. These are just promises to hurting people. And this has been a lifeline for me. When I'm unable to sleep at night, I dig this out of the drawer of my night table, and I just flip through these. And you should have a strategy if you want to get through low points, not just for waiting for God to speak, but to read what he's already spoken and be profoundly built up by it. Super helpful to have. So yeah, direct or not, he helps. Now here's one other thing. Check this out. He's like, I have many people in this city. See that? Paul, he's like rolling into a town that's new territory for him, but God's like, hey, I've already been here. And so one big encouragement is remembering that wherever you go in serving people, God has been there before you are. It's so easy to think when you're cutting a new group, reaching a new group of people, to think, I'm the first person that's ever thought of this. I'm the first person here. I'm the tip of God's spear. Well, God's already been there. I remember working with kids across I-71 in South Linden, low-income kids. And we were trying to get kids to come into this basement to do a Bible study. So we would drive over there. And if for every kid we picked up, we'd see 15 other kids up and down the street that we wanted to bring but couldn't. And I remember talking with other people in this ministry. How are we going to ever get these kids to come out? How are we going to ever get the word out? So I go over one time to pick up a kid. His mom comes to me, and she's like, hey, I've been inviting kids up and down the street to show up. And I look up, and I can see like a pack of kids walking down the sidewalk toward my car. I'm like, I'm going to have to get another car. But you just realize God has boots on the ground here. God's been here. This is not something I'm doing that's new. I'm entering into something God's already been involved with. And that, man, if you're in a low point and just realizing this isn't just me against the world, God's been preparing people's hearts. That is a sustaining thought when you're feeling low. It's so encouraging to remember God's always gone before us. Okay, so these three things, plus direct encouragement from God, and in the Word both, and then also God going before us. So you can see there's like a building momentum in this chapter, things God's doing to encourage Paul, which is why after this starts to kind of accumulate, Paul decides to stay for a year and a half, teaching them the word of God. I think these encouragements had a lot to do that. And while it says Gallio was proconsul of Achaia, doesn't mean everything was easy. It says the Jews made a united attack on Paul and brought him into court. This man, they charged, is persuading people to worship God in ways contrary to the law. Now, real quick, this little footnote that Gallio was proconsul of Achaia. You know what? That's actually true. During this time, there was a Gallio who was the proconsul. It's like a governor of this region. We found a stone in the city of Delphi, dug it up out of the ground, and it mentions this guy, Gallio, who is a friend of Caesar. There's his name right there in the stone. And so I just throw this in to point out that as we're reading through these accounts, this is not some fairy tale, right? This is deeply anchored in verifiable history. That's this account where we're reading where the Jews brought Paul before Gallio. We know exactly where that happened. If you look in the ruins of the Forum of ancient Corinth, there's a little raised stone platform called the Bema. And this is where Gallio would stand to pronounce judgments on different court cases. This is the spot where this scene happened that we're reading about. Now, the dumb thing that the Jews did here is when they appeared before Gallio, who was a Roman, they accused Paul of violating Jewish law. Big mistake. Gallio is like, why would I care about that? Right? He's like, just as Paul was about to speak, Gallio said to the Jews, if you Jews are making a complaint about some misdemeanor or serious crime, it would be reasonable for me to listen. But since it involves questions about words and names and your own law, settle the matter for yourselves. I will not be a judge of such things. He's like, don't try to involve me in some petty theological dispute of yours. I'm out. And so he says, it says that he ejects them from the court. Get out of here. Get out of my court. Just clear this area. And here's what's crazy. After that happened, after the total stunning failure for the Jewish congregation of the synagogue, it says they turn on Sosthenes, the synagogue ruler, and apparently Sosthenes replaced Crispus because Crispus went to follow Paul. They turned on Sosthenes, the synagogue ruler, and beat him in front of the court, but Gallio showed no concern whatever. Oh, man. So this guy, he's new to the job, and his own congregation turns on him. That is rough duty. Okay, so how in the world would this be encouraging to Paul? Well, this is the thing. Gallio's, you bring Paul and you're accusing, there's nothing he's done wrong. That granted him some implied legal connection or protection. This is part of when God said, I'm not going to let anyone harm you. This is part of how that happened. So this little interaction with Gallio, who's like, we're not going to do anything with Paul, was profoundly encouraging to him. And so we read that he stayed on for some time. He's like, yeah, okay, I think I can work here for a while. When he finally did leave with these brothers and sailed to Syria, accompanied by Priscilla and Aquila, he didn't leave because he was under threat. He left because it was time to go, because his job was done. And so, yeah, pretty cool. Bringing in new friends and old ones when we're encouraged, providing needed resources, maybe money or a place to meet or some other thing that we need, a breakthrough, seeing an unlikely, you know, person come to God, direct encouragement from God, and him going before us, all these things, super encouraging, his protection. All of this, anybody, as you're starting to think through, well, what does God do to go with us and encourage us? It's something like this. Now, you may be like, I'm looking at the list and I don't really see that. There's got to be somebody here who's like, yeah, I'm serving God and I'm discouraged and I'm not seeing any of the things you're talking about. And what I would say to that, I don't know what you would say to it, but I would say, well, maybe your sample size is a little too small. You're looking at life through a soda straw, right? You can only see what you can see. You can't see the whole sweep of time and what God's up to. If you could pull the camera back like God can, you might reach a different conclusion. One example of this that's right here in this chapter in Acts 18 is this Sosthenes guy. Check this out. He shows up later in the New Testament when Paul writes to the Corinthians. Look at his introduction. Paul, called to be an apostle of Christ Jesus by the will of God, and our brother Sosthenes to the church of God in Corinth. Sosthenes is the guy that the synagogue congregation beat up. Maybe Paul went to him after that and was like, hey, dude, looks like you need a new group of friends. What about following me? How about you hang out with me for a little bit? I don't know how it happened, but it's crystal clear that this guy who was leading the charge against Paul eventually became his co-worker. How did that happen? I'll tell you this. I bet anything, when Paul was preaching in the synagogue, I bet he saw no evidence that God was doing anything in Sosthenes' heart. It would have been incredibly difficult for him to visibly see the effect of God's work in Sosthenes, and yet God was working the whole time. That's why Sosthenes eventually joined Paul. And so I just gotta, part of what we have to do here when we're down is we have to doubt our doubts. You know, we have to ask ourselves, okay, I think God's absent. That's what it feels like. I feel like I'm talking to the ceiling, God. But is he? Or is it that we have insufficient data? Maybe he's not there's no visible evidence now, but maybe over time I'm going to see, oh my gosh, those words I spoke had a huge impact. What about taking it even further? Not just admitting humbly, I have insufficient data, but what about telling God, this is heroic faith, right? Hey, it feels like you're not there, but I affirm that you're at work, and I'm looking forward to seeing the impact of this work, even if it doesn't happen in my lifetime. Maybe I don't see the impact of how you are working until I'm in heaven, but I affirm that you are working. That's where God wants us to get, even when we're hurting. Okay. So, some final thoughts here. One is, there can be some shame sometimes that we feel because we're down. You know, our faith is weak. We just can't bring our A game, and we're just kind of stuck. And you can really beat yourself up for that. And I just hope you realize how common it is to go through a low point. It really is. Look in the Bible, look in church history. Some of the greatest servants who have ever lived have gone through really brutal low points. This is C.H. Spurgeon, the cigar-smoking preacher. One of the most powerful orators, you know, speakers in the last 200 years. Okay, and listen to him describe what it was like to serve God. I've suffered many times from severe sickness and frightful mental depression, seeking almost to despair. Almost every year, I've been laid aside for a season, for flesh and blood can't bear the strain, at least such flesh and blood as mine. It's like, I could barely do this. I could barely get up to speak. Yeah, it's normal. You think about the Psalms are filled with God's people battling depression. Jesus said, my soul is troubled. Okay, so it's not having low points. You will have them. Maybe you are having them. It's how we react to our low points. It's what we do in the middle of our low points. And here's my main point about low points. If you don't get anything else I say, here it is. In ways you can see and in ways you can't, God is always, always lifting you up. Can you see that that's true? No. But can you believe in faith and look back and see other examples? Yes, you can. And that's how we relate to these low points. You may be like, well, I don't know, what would God have to do with somebody who's not ever even darkened the door of a church or had any interest in him? Well, you can go to God. Doesn't matter what your resume is. Doesn't matter how treacherous you've been or the things you've done wrong. Anybody that's willing to come to him and own their sin, he says you can draw near with confidence to the throne of grace and receive mercy and grace to help in time of need. Right now, no matter how low you are, no matter how far from God you felt your whole life, you can go to God and know you'll receive mercy if you call out to him. And I hope you do. It is cool. All right, here's something else that I know in our therapeutic culture, this is a hard pill to swallow. Paul came into Corinth and he was trembling. And he also served while he trembled. He did not hang up his cleats and walk off the field, right? He stayed in it. He felt bad but kept sharing his faith. Now, does that mean he was somehow untrue to himself or fake or insincere, like he was just legalistically forcing himself? No, it was not. It was him realizing he knew God's promises, and it was him choosing in faith against his feelings. He loved the people of Corinth, and getting the word out to them was more important to him than being comfortable. And it's just that this is an example. You know, there are going to be times where every cell in our body just says, sit down and stop. And the Bible talks about rest. The Bible talks about getting counseling from friends when we're going through hard times. But this idea that we also put one foot in front of the other even when we're hurting, that's a big message that's part of this chapter. He acted against his feelings, and the outcome was huge. I put this little quote up because years ago I had a buddy who battled with very, very bad bouts of depression. I think today they would have diagnosed her with a major depressive disorder. And this woman, just an amazing lady, really great example of what I'm talking about. If you went up into her bathroom, she had a plaque on the wall right by her mirror where she brushed her teeth every day. And it said, a ship is safe in port, but that's not what ships are built for. Just a reminder to her every day, despite how hard it could be, that God had difficult things for her to do, that he wanted her to get out and try to do. That's what he built her to do. It's what he built all of us to do. And so, yeah. Think about Paul and his choice against his feelings. How many of the Corinthians believed. How all those people that were trained by Paul for 18 months were enriched in their walks. How, according to 1 Corinthians 14, Paul didn't just start a church. It mentions churches. There was a multiplying house church movement in Corinth. You know, if you're, you know, in the tank here, here's one of the greatest promises on this. Don't become weary in doing good, for at the proper time, you will reap a harvest if you don't give up. So don't give up. Don't give up. Let God minister to you and encourage you. And I realize part of that is actually having eyes to see how God's encouraged us. You think about all these ways that Paul was encouraged by God. Can you see any of this in your own life? You know, I mentioned how near God's encouragement can be. Maybe it is the person sitting next to you. Maybe it's the Bible that's in your hands, or the cell phone, I should say. Maybe it's the fact that you have a house where you could host a home church, or a car where you could drive to go serve somebody. Maybe it's that you've got a little more expendable cash than Paul did that you could use to be generous, especially this time of year. God's put a lot of things in your life, a lot of people in your life, a lot of his truth in your life to build you up. And part of being built up is having eyes to see it. And so I would just encourage you guys, walking out of here, what about today, thinking through this list and just taking a little time to thank God for the ways he has already encouraged you. You will be better for it if you do that. And then just remember, too, you can partner with God in encouraging people. You may be the person he wants to put in someone's life to build them up. And are you, as you roll into a room this size, you know you're going to run into somebody who's hurting. Have you told God in the car on the way here, Lord, use me to be your agent of encouragement for whoever is in this room that's hurting? We can partner with God like that too. So, okay. There you go. That's Acts 18.
Yeah, Lord. Thanks for these prayers. Help us be an agent of encouragement to somebody today. And help us not go to sleep until we thank you for at least one way that you've intervened to be an encouragement to us. Amen.